I'm Kathy with a C.
And I'm Kathy with a K.
And this is Killer Destinations. Today's destination is Hemphill, Texas. This small city has just over 1,000 residents and is located next to the border with Louisiana. And in 2020, in this close-knit community with its trusting and gracious residents, was one individual with a pernicious desire for revenge. Around 5 a.m. on Halloween morning of 2020, Lily Hudson stumbled upon something from a nightmare. She was driving by herself along Highway 83 on a way to pick up a friend when she saw something unusual. She saw a Honda Accord on the opposite side of the road, stopped with the driver's door open and the hazard lights on. Immediately behind the Honda was a black F-150 pickup truck. Lily didn't see any people standing around, so she thought maybe somebody was hurt. The driver's side door was open, and there was a woman in the car slumped over the steering wheel, and Kath, she actually thought it was her friend Kenesha. And so as she approaches, she's in a bit of a panic, and then she realized it's not Kenesha, but now she needs to find out if this girl's okay. So she reached into the car and shook her shoulder, but there was no reaction. And she started to panic a little bit, and she reached out and touched her neck to see if she could feel a pulse. She found nothing and immediately called 911.
Sabine County Sheriff's deputies arrived at the scene, and they determined, Kath, as soon as they got there, that what Lily had thought was correct. The female driver was deceased. Now, as the deputies waited for the coroner to arrive, they went back to the F-150 behind the Accord to check inside and see if anyone was there, and they found it empty. And actually, unlike the Accord, which had blood in the car, there was no blood that they could see in the F-150. After there's no one in the pickup truck, they actually go behind the truck and start circling around to the non-road side of where the cars are. And as they are walking past the truck, they notice lying on the ground is an unconscious man. He's right behind the Accord. He's curled in the fetal position, and he has blood all over his face. And he was still breathing. So, of course, the deputies immediately call for an ambulance. And once he's in the ambulance, they go back to look at where this man was laying. And they discovered that he was on his side, right, curled in the fetal position. His back was kind of on top of three different items. His body had essentially been hiding a pair of boots, a baseball cap, and a rifle. After this young man is sent to the hospital, deputies start looking through the car to see if they can identify the young woman who was slumped in the driver's seat. They have found a purse inside, and they were able to identify this young woman as 19-year-old Livy Lewis. Now, according to body cam footage, Kathy, there's a YouTube website called Explore With Us. And so anytime we reference body cam footage, this is the YouTube site that we got it from, because they had a lot of it. And it was super helpful, because obviously it's right in the minute and there's no adjusting for anything.
Right.
So it's kind of like you get everything, the good, bad, and the ugly.
Everything is authentic. The deputies were talking to each other and, very authentically.
Using this YouTube channel body cam footage, what we saw next was that the deputies were talking about notifying Livy's next of kin. Now, remember, it's a small town. Everybody knows everybody. Gossip spreads at the speed of light. And on these cameras, they decided that they were not going to immediately notify her next of kin, which was her mother. And it's because they knew that she was going to come down to the scene and they wanted to be able to
preserve the scene.
Exactly.
Yeah,
they wanted to be able to go through it.
Right.
They didn't want to have anything else to disrupt it. And Livy's body was still in the car waiting for the coroner. And they certainly didn't want Livy's mom to stumble onto that.
Right.
But as you can imagine, as we said, Hemphill's a little town. And soon enough, Livy's mom, her name was Darcy Bass, started getting phone calls from people saying, your daughter's car's at the side of the road and it's surrounded by emergency vehicles. So, of course, Ms. Bass drives straight down to the scene. Now, what was awful is seeing this woman who knows something happened to her daughter.
Totally.
Does not know what. Thankfully, does not know she's in the car. And asks the deputies who are there, where's my daughter? Where's my kid? And in fact, She said it 23 times.
She was absolutely, a number of variations. I'm not going to say hysterical. Hysterical is not the right word. It was more like
frantic,
angry and frantic and demanding. I get it, you know? And so, because she's, where's my child? Where's, you know,
where's my
Lily?
Kid? Where's my daughter?
Where's my kid? Where, yeah. And she was met by silence from the deputies.
Yeah, they weren't even trying to placate her.
Exactly. It would have been the most frustrating thing because all she wants to know is where her daughter is. But she's dead inside the car. The deputies are trying to preserve the crime scene. They cannot have her rifling through the car and freaking out. So they're not saying anything. It was horrible to watch.
And what made it worse is they weren't answering any of her questions. But, you know, there was that one deputy who went up to her and said, calm down.
Which is always the best way to get a woman to calm down.
It really is.
It's almost like throwing a cat into the pool and expecting a good reaction. You know what I mean? Like...
And so unsurprisingly, they did not get the reaction they wanted.
Yeah, Mrs. Bass did not calm down.
Exactly. And in fact, she refused to leave. And the longer she had to wait, the more frustrated she got.
Oh, yeah.
So finally,
I felt so sorry for her.
Oh, I did too. I cannot imagine what she went through.
Yeah.
Detectives finally arrived at the scene and they told Ms. Bass at that moment that they didn't know what happened to Libby. And so Ms. Bass said, what are you talking about? Do you not know whether she's dead or alive? And the detective answered, she is not alive. And again, unbeknownst to Miss Bass, Livy's body was in the car. And I truly think that was a godsend.
That she didn't know.
That she didn't know.
I agree.
But the detectives who were there then very kindly and gently forced Miss Bass to leave the site. There was a gentleman with her. I don't know if it was a friend, a husband, a boyfriend, whatnot. He was pretty much staying out of her way based on what I saw in this body cam footage. But when the detectives were like, we need you to leave because we need to find out what happened. That's when he kind of stepped in. And I honestly think it's because the detectives, they weren't being assholes.
They were being kind.
They were.
And firm.
And here's the other thing, though, to mention. It was Halloween of 2020, COVID. So everybody has a mask on.
Oh, yeah.
Which just made it so much harder to read expressions. Because at one point she was yelling and she's at one of the deputies and she's like, quit smiling at me. This is not a joke. And the guy with her was like, he didn't laugh or say anything.
Yeah.
And she's like, it's because he has a mask on. I can just tell. But of course,
she was super frustrated and she was only seeing what she wanted to see because she was so aggravated.
Exactly. She didn't know what to do.
Yeah. But I am sure there was no deputy smiling at that scene. So as detectives approached the car, as Kath said, there was a lot of blood and it was located in the car and on Livy's face. So they were looking for a point of entry and it appeared to them that someone had tried to break the glass on the passenger side of the car by hitting it several times with an object, but that didn't work. Detectives also noticed that the driver's side door seemed to have been struck multiple times with a very heavy object. As they look closer to the door, they notice their shoe prints and they realize that the culprit was kicking in the door. And the location of the kicks were right underneath the door handle. So with pressure going forward into the door, the crease of the door itself was kind of pulling away. So whoever was doing this was able to get inside the car with either hand or crowbar or some kind of leverage to get that driver's side door open. Detectives also noticed a hole in the dashboard that they believed came from a .308 cartridge. And this was the same type of ammunition that was used for the rifle that was laying next to the unconscious guy on the ground. As crime scene techs and the coroner were on their way, detectives continued to search for clues. So they looked inside the F-150 and they found a wallet. Inside the wallet was an identification card and it matched the gentleman who was unconscious on the ground. He was 24-year-old Matthew Edgar. And they also found two phones, one of which belonged to Matthew, one of which belonged to Livy, both in the F-150.
So as we said, Matthew Edgar was taken to the hospital. Sabine County Sheriff's investigator, J.P. McDonough, went to the hospital after he learned that Matthew had woken up. And it turned out that, you know, we had said Matthew had all that blood on his face. None of it was his. Other than a very small cut on the bottom of his chin, he had no injuries whatsoever. When the detective asked where all the blood was from, Matthew's response was he had no memory whatsoever of what had happened the night before, and he stood by that story. Now, the investigator, and this was part of the body cam footage that I really enjoyed, because, you know, detectives, like, it's almost like they're toying with you,
right,
to get the answer. But it was this, like, older man, let's put him in his 50s, with this great, like, Texas gravelly drawl, where he was just, you know, like, come on, son, tell me what you were up to. I mean, you know, it was not, you were out partying. Total paraphrase.
Did y'all have a good time?
Exactly.
And by the way, 50s isn't old. I just want everyone to know that.
But I mean, he wasn't like some young punk 30-year-old deputy.
Right.
Or 30-year-old detective. Like he was seasoned.
Okay, there you go.
That's a better word. A seasoned detective.
Yeah.
So Investigator McDonough told him, well, we need answers, son, because there was a car parked in front of yours and there was a dead woman inside. And who was it and what happened? Matthew was like, I have no idea. So Investigator McDonough just keeps carrying on asking the questions. And at one point he said to Matthew, so do you have a girlfriend, a wife? Do you have any women in your life? And he said, I kind of have a girlfriend. I have an ex-wife and I have an ex-girlfriend. His ex-wife's name is Montana and his ex-girlfriend was Livy. Then the detective asked Matthew, well, when was the last time you saw Montana or Livy? And he said, well, I saw them the night before. There was a party at a friend of theirs house. This guy's name was Bobby Ozan. And he said, and we were all partying there. But last thing I remember is leaving the house, going back to my own house, putting the kids to bed, and then going out on the porch. But otherwise, it was a complete blank. And the detective said, well, did you have anything to drink that night? And he said he remembered having a couple of beers that afternoon, but at the party, he drank a bottle of Jim Beam.
As one does.
Then, as they were talking, the investigator said, well, you know, you brought up your ex-girlfriend, Livy. The woman in the car in front of you was actually shot. And Matthew said, well, who was shot and killed? And he said, it was Livy. And at that point, Matthew turned kind of over onto his stomach and just cried into his pillow. So, Kath, in this last segment at the hospital that I saw on the body cam footage, the investigator said to Matthew, what kind of car do you drive? And he said, well, I've got two. I have a Dodge truck and a Dodge SUV. The investigator said, whose F-150 was that? And remember, Matthew remembered nothing of what happened that night and said, I don't know for sure, but my cousin owns a car exactly like the one you just described.
By all accounts, Livy Lewis was a young woman with a very bright future. She was the valedictorian of her high school class, which Kathy wishes she was, but she wasn't.
I don't wish I was, but I wasn't.
But Livy was a straight-A student, and because she was so smart, she got a scholarship to a local college. Her mother was very proud of her and talked about how Livy wanted to become a nurse and then ultimately wanted to become a physician's assistant, which is a wonderful job. During high school, Livy worked at a nursing home, and she was working on a certificate. And so by the time she graduated, she was a certified nurse's assistant, which was a job that she loved. And honestly, that is a calling.
Oh, absolutely.
Like,
it is.
Working with older people is a calling. And shout out to Patrice, the CNA, who helped my mom in the hospital recently. She was so awesome. And she told me, she goes, this is what I want to do. I want to work with the elderly. I
love it. God bless her.
Exactly.
I mean, and it's hard. I mean, because, and we've talked about this before too, like nurses, especially in whatever form that takes, a physician's assistant, which I know they're not nurses, but like a nursing assistant, whatnot, they bear the brunt of some of the worst days in people's lives,
totally.
Whether it's their patient or the family or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've told the story when my mom was going through chemotherapy, like she got angry. She was angry all the time. And for a woman who never swore ever, she could swear up a blue streak like nobody's business. And my sister and I would always be behind her wherever, whatever doctor we were at, or if we were in the hospital. And we're like, we're sorry. We're so sorry. She's not like that. We're sorry. And we'd bring cookies and whatnot.
Right.
And they're like, no, we understand. It happens. I guess chemotherapy does that sometimes to patients.
I can't imagine your mother behaving like that. That's incredible, because yeah, she was such an elegant lady.
She was.
I know.
What happened to us?
What's the phrase?
The apple... Felt really far from the tree.
Like, yeah, rolled down the hill, traveled down a stream, got to the other side.
Went into the sewer, exactly. Went out to the ocean.
So during the time that Livy was working at this nursing home, Everyone loved her, including the staff, and she became really good friends with a woman named Taylor. And Taylor was a few years older than Livy, but they immediately became fast friends. And Taylor had a daughter that Livy loved, and Livy would spend many nights at Taylor's house with her and her daughter, just enjoying a chick night. And in one of these interviews that I saw, Taylor basically said, "Wherever you saw me, you saw Livy." And it was through Taylor that Livy met Matthew Edgar.
Taylor introduced Livy and Matthew to each other, and they started dating. But 23-year-old Matthew, Livy was 18 at the time.
Because she was a senior in high school.
Yeah, she was a senior in high school. She turned 18 in October. They started dating in November. But they had to keep it a secret because Matthew was married and had two small boys. So phone records that were uncovered as part of the investigation indicated that about 11 months before Livy was killed, she and Matthew were texting each other. It was during one of these early text messages between the two of them that Matthew wrote, "You do realize you cannot say a word to anybody that we are texting, LOL. And Livy responded, and I hope I get the sarcasm right, "Well, obviously I'm not going to brag about texting a married man, but thanks for the clarification." Did I get it right? I think I got it close.
I think you got it right.
And it appeared that after a very brief relationship, Livy ended things very quickly and very firmly. But despite Livy breaking up with Matthew, he wasn't done pursuing her. About 4 months after Livy broke up with Matthew, he started texting her again, complaining about how unhappy he was in the marriage and how he was cheating on his wife again, this time not with Livy. But Livy told him in response to this statement that he was cheating that she wasn't really down with being a homewrecker, and basically what she said stood. They were done. She didn't want to date him anymore. But now, nearly 2 months later, in response to this, Matthew actually ended his marriage and asked for a divorce from Montana, his wife, and the mother of his two children. And apparently, Kathy, Matthew ended his marriage with Montana by sending her a text.
That is so atrocious, but go ahead.
It said, "It ain't you, it's me. Me always cheating on you." Now, you know he thought he was hysterical.
Oh my God.
But he's not.
Nope.
And after receiving this text, Montana, Matthew's wife, hired a divorce attorney. 4 days later, Matthew moved out and he circled back to Livy because now he's a free man.
So Livy wound up taking Matthew back and they began dating again. So now they're on round two of dating. And of course, Montana, the ex-wife, does not like Livy at all. And I think that's, you know, a natural feeling.
Oh, yeah. And honestly, like, I think it's obvious that, you know, Montana is a mom of two boys. She's at home raising them to make sure she raises good, solid citizens. And Livy was 18, just out of high school, and she was footloose and fancy free, dating her soon-to-be ex-husband.
Exactly.
I get it.
And then at some point, Montana's attitude toward Livy changed. And she became inviting and gracious and trying to become friends with Livy. And Livy accepted her friendly advances and they became friends. Livy considered Montana a friend.
And a good friend, actually, not just a friend.
Right. And Livy, she enjoyed the boys, you know, and she knew she had a responsibility not to make the boys' lives any more difficult than they already were after their father left the house. So Livy's mom, Ms. Bass, believed that Montana's motives were not particularly altruistic. She thought that Montana might be jealous of her daughter, which is understandable.
Yeah.
And she thought that Montana was kind of taking the attitude, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. And so she told her daughter, be careful, pay attention, basically encouraging her to maintain boundaries.
Civility.
Exactly, with Montana, warning her to be cautious, essentially. But Livy didn't particularly listen because, again, like you said, she believed Montana was a very good friend.
She took her at face value.
Right. And Livy's friends were actually warning her because they thought that perhaps Matthew was using both women, trying to play them against each other or having his cake and eating it too. So Livy continues dating Matthew during the course of his divorce. As Matthew was growing closer to Livy, he was becoming verbally abusive. And then within a very short time, it escalated into physical abuse. And Livy's friends believed that she was not necessarily in love with who Matthew was, but she was in love with the idea of who Matthew could be. which is such a young person's
frame of mind.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
She knew that what he was doing and how he was treating her wasn't right, but she still stayed because she believed he was going to be a good man.
And I think at that point, aren't you also kind of involved with the kids?
Just everything.
You know? Everything. Like, and it's a small town.
And for a short amount of time, Livy was staying with Taylor. And there was a period that while Livy was living with Taylor, Matthew was also living with Taylor. And Taylor told 48 Hours that Matthew would just get drunk and crazy. His trigger was alcohol.
Right.
And he would just, as she said, holler at Livy. And it would get so bad that Taylor finally said, "You're not welcome in my house anymore. Done with you."
And, you know, the other thing too, talking about the abuse, is that phone records then, as the detectives were investigating, they were able to pull some of these up. And it showed that at times Matthew would send texts to Livy that were very nice and gentle and good night.
Lovey-dovey.
Yeah. Good night, baby. I love you. Things like that. And in response, Livy would say, "I don't know why you keep putting your hands on me. My body hurts today."
She was very good at documenting her physical abuse in her text messages.
She was, absolutely. Now, in the summer of 2020, after 9 months of dating, but this is the on and off dating that they've done, so it hasn't collectively been 9 months, Livy planned to move into the college campus where she was going to attend school. And somehow, Matthew was able to convince her not to do that, but rather to move in with him. You'll like this quote, Kath. So she could take care of him and his two boys. She even redecorated the boys' bedrooms. So she was all in. And, you know, honestly, if you look at her job as a certified nursing assistant and wanting to do all of that,
she was a caretaker by nature.
Absolute caretaker.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But within a couple of months of her moving in with Matthew at this point, things just deteriorated and got so much worse between Livy and Matthew. And in fact, in August of 2020, Livy texted one of her cousins and sent her a picture of her broken and bloody nose that Matthew had just done to her. It was at this point where Livy had texted Matthew and said, quote, "I want to be in our home with you, but I can't do the way you act when you drink. I'm scared of you. You've laid your hands on me multiple times, and I deserve better than that." When detectives showed these text messages to Livy's mom, she was blindsided. Livy had never even hinted at the fact that Matthew might be abusing her. But when detectives were talking to Ms. Bass, she said she actually thinks the reason Livy never did that is that she knew that mom would be apoplectic and probably go after Matthew.
Oh, totally.
And she didn't want her mom to get into trouble.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure she's right.
Based on the interviews that I saw of Ms. Bass, she would have done something.
Absolutely would have. I'm sure
like she would have. Like there would have been a little street justice.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
A BetterHelp ad. Lewis Capaldi partnered with BetterHelp to get word out about how important therapy can be.
I struggle most weeks to like get up, get myself up and ready and go to therapy or, you know, whatever. Like even like to open the laptop to talk to my therapist sometimes can be really difficult. But I do it because I realise how important it is for me to continue to feel good. Because like, I felt the best I've felt in a long time through therapy.
Learn more about online therapy at betterhelp.com.
Going back to the broken nose that we were talking about, though, after this fight, Livy broke up with Matthew. And texts later showed that during this time, right before they broke up, so he's abusing her and she's living at home, Matthew was actually cheating on her with ex-wife Montana.
Oh, seriously, Montana.
Yeah, with Montana.
So he was having his cake and eating it too.
Yep.
I didn't realize it was Montana.
Yeah,
I knew he was a cheater pumpkin eater, but I didn't realize it was with his ex.
I like to say cheater pants on fire.
Do you like to mix your metaphors?
I really do.
So detectives go to Bobby Ozan, and he's the guy that was hosting a party just a few hours before Livy's body was found. He tells them that Montana, Matthew, and Livy were all at this party. Now, Livy and Matthew had been broken up about a month at this point. At some point, Bobby goes to bed and he tells the three of them, you know, Montana, Livy, and Matthew, you guys can hang out. You guys could sit outside of my porch and continue drinking if you wish. So they do. And then at some point, Livy says that she was going to spend the night there at Bobby's house rather than drive home. Matthew gets angry because he thinks he's going to get lucky that night or whatever. I don't even know.
He thinks Bobby's going to get lucky that night.
Oh, you think so? You think it was just jealousy like that?
Yeah, I think it was total jealousy.
Okay, so he goes crazy. Montana runs in the house to get Bobby to try to control Matthew. And Bobby pins Matthew against the car and just like, dude, calm down, knock it off, blah, 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 blah. And Livy takes the opportunity at that point to hop in her car and drive away.
Smart girl.
Montana does the same thing. She hops in her car and she drives away. And so Matthew squirrels away from Bobby, gets into his car and follows them both. Like just peels out of his property and follows
bad
both women. Exactly. So after the interviews of Bobby Ozanne and Montana, Detective McDonough goes back to the hospital and places Matthew Edgar under arrest.
Now, according to Texas law, which isn't covered in Killer Destination School in law, but I really hope someday it is because we have a lot of cases out of Texas.
We do. And I strongly hope that Kim Kardashian learns it too.
I do too. Me too. And I hope she'll like come to our graduation ceremonies.
Exactly.
Maybe speak at them. Once Matthew Edgar was arrested, the DA's office only had 90 days to get an indictment from the grand jury. Otherwise, they would have to release him on bond. So, Investigator McDonough enlisted the help of the Texas Rangers. So, the Texas Rangers started working with the Sabine County Sheriff's deputies to start gathering the information. And this included further conversations with Bobby Ozanne, again, the host of the party, and Montana, Matthew Edgar's ex-wife. Montana had a lot of explaining to do. She actually originally told investigators, Kath, that she did not know what happened to Livy until about 6 a.m. Now, the 911 call came in at 5 a.m., but of course, small town Texas, that was plenty of time for the information to get back to Montana that Livy had been killed. But when detectives looked at Montana's phone and text messages, they saw that Montana and Matthew had been texting each other during the time that Livy was killed. After Matthew left Bobby's house, he actually went to his home. Now, his home was on property owned by his grandparents, and this was kind of like a compound, Kath, because Matthew's grandparents lived on the property, as did Matthew's parents. And by the way, Montana lived with Matthew's parents. There was also a home for Matthew, and there were several other properties on this land where other people lived. Didn't sound like they were full-out houses, but people were still living there. So I don't know if they were trailers or campers or anything like that, but there was something else there. Once Matthew got home, he texted Montana at about 3:22 in the morning and said, I'm leaving, better get here and get your kids. So 12 minutes after this text, Matthew texted Montana again and said, I'm home, I got Livy's keys and phone. So Montana's text back to him was, well, where's Livy? And Matthew's response was one word, dead. And so, of course, the investigators say to Montana, did you not think to call police when Matthew just told you that Livy was dead? And Montana said, no, it didn't occur to me because he always threatened to kill people and he never did. I thought it was a joke. So, like, why would I believe that? And
I could actually see that.
Yeah.
I could actually see her looking at the text and going, what a jerk.
And she said to the investigators, when I got this text, I texted Matthew back and said, can I come down there? Matthew said, yeah. She told her mother-in-law, remember Montana lived at Matthew's parents' house. She told her mother-in-law that she was going to go to Matthew's house to find out what was going on. And Matthew's mother, Cindy, said, no, absolutely not. I won't let you go. And so at that point, Montana said that she gave up the fight, went back to bed and didn't wake up again till about 6 o'clock when she started getting information from people that Livy had died.
Before the district attorney could present the case to the grand jury, what happened?
Effing COVID.
Stupid COVID. So all the courts were shut down. And because they couldn't indict him, the judge was forced by law to bond him out.
But it had to be a reasonable bail.
Reasonable.
Yeah.
It was for $50,000. So all they had to do was come up with $5,000. So, of course, his family bailed him out and he had to wear an ankle monitor after that. But the minute he got out, detectives rearrested him for assaulting Montana because he hit her on the night of
Bobby Ozanne's party.
Exactly. Prosecutors, obviously, and detectives are obviously just trying to keep him in jail. And I'm honestly not sure why this is, but the judge gave him a $325,000 bail for this assault.
As opposed to the $50,000 for murder.
Although he wasn't indicted. So maybe just that's the difference. I don't know.
It could be. It sounds ridiculous.
It does sound ridiculous. So the judge assigns a $325,000 bond, which his family, they come up with the extra $32,000 to get him out. So he's immediately back with his family.
Free man.
Out of jail. So on the first day of trial testimony, the district attorney puts on the science. He talks about the DNA. He talks about how Livy's blood was found on his face and there was a spot of her blood on his pants. And he's talking about the evidence that was collected at the scene. And he's showing the jury what his clothing looked like because obviously it had been collected at the hospital. They also bring to the jury the text messages from Livy's phone about the domestic abuse that she suffered at the hands of Matthew.
And his cheating ways.
Oh, yeah. And they also introduce the text messages between him and Montana. Now, remember, when he was interviewed in the hospital, he told Detective McDonough, "I don't remember anything. I was so wasted. I had a bottle of Jim Beam, blah, blah, blah."
And maintained that throughout.
And the introduction of the text messages in the early morning hours of the night that Livy was murdered clearly showed that he was not this blind, drunk person who didn't remember anything.
Right.
You know, his texts were very intentional.
And they made sense. And they had punctuation.
After the second day of testimony, the prosecutor told the defense attorney, a guy named Rob Hughes, that the prosecutor would be resting the next day. And so, hey, buddy, you're up. You better have your witnesses ready. You know, let's keep this kind of moving along. The next morning, as it's the defense turn to present evidence, Matthew Edgar does not show up to court. His mother, Cindy Hogan Edgar, told the court that her son was nowhere to be found.
What do we call that?
He dipped.
He dipped. Dippity doo da, dippity a. My oh my, what a wonderful day. Okay, so here's the crazy part. As Kath said, when Matthew was let out on bond, he had to wear an ankle monitor. But what we didn't know at the time was that Matthew was responsible for charging the battery on his ankle monitor every night.
Ruh-roh.
How do they do that?
I have no idea.
So authorities believed that Matthew essentially let the battery run out and then took off on foot. So the judge didn't want to declare a mistrial because Matthew wasn't going to take the stand anyway. So they were just going to go forward with what was going on. But they didn't tell the jury that Matthew had dipped. They just acted like everything was normal. You have the defense attorney who now doesn't have Matthew at his table with him, and none of Matthew's family and friends were in the courtroom after having been there those two whole days before that. I mean, it wasn't like it was a three-week trial.
That's so interesting.
All of a sudden, they're gone, and nobody is addressing the elephant in the room of where Matthew is.
You know the jurors were like, oh, he tried to kill himself.
Something.
He's with his family at the hospital right now, or something like that.
Exactly.
Like, they make up scenarios in their head.
Totally. And probably none of them thought, you know, I wonder if that ankle bracelet or ankle monitor needed to be charged. He needed to charge it himself.
Right.
Yeah. After Attorney Hughes presented the defense case, it wasn't a surprise that the jury only deliberated for about 90 minutes before coming back with a guilty verdict. The judge actually declined sentencing until, hopefully, Matthew was caught. Really quickly, I always do a headline of like all the different sections. And I love The Fugitive with Tommy Lee Jones, where he's talking about what they need to search. And he's like, we're going to search every hen house, every dog house. Right. And I couldn't remember the next line. So in my heading, I just put Waffle House. It was appropriate for East Texas.
It was appropriate.
So, of course, now the Sabine County Sheriff's Department has to look for their fugitive. They've got to find Matthew. And so not only do they have the Texas Rangers helping them, but they bring in the U.S. Marshals. And what have we always said?
You're going to get caught.
Yeah, if the marshals are after you, just stop.
Give up.
Give up. They're going to find you. Don't be stupid. A man named Jeff Coulter was brought in to head this task force for the U.S. Marshals. He talked to 48 Hours as part of this show that we've watched. And they said to him, well, did you talk to Matthew's family? And he said, absolutely not. I don't like being lied to. And they'd already put out there what their position was. They were saying that they thought Livy was killed by the cartel. And he's like, I didn't even want to waste my time, which I kind of love the bluntness of it all.
I appreciate that. Yeah. Exactly.
The teams actually looked for Matthew for nearly a year, chasing down every single lead that came into them. And then they got an anonymous tip that Matthew might just be hiding in plain sight. It was reported in this tip that Matthew was staying at a friend of the family's house just a short distance, as in like a few yards, away from his grandparents' house and this big compound they were on.
So he was on their actual property.
No, he wasn't on their property. He was like a few yards outside of the property at a friend of the family's house.
I see.
So you couldn't say the family was hiding him. The friend
was. I see what you're saying.
So before, though, this team of Sabine County sheriffs and the U.S. Marshals could go in like gangbusters, and I'm paraphrasing, they had to put eyes on him so they could identify that he was actually there. And so they decided, you know, we got to get as close as possible to this house where we think he's hiding out. So they go in under cover of darkness. There's woods all around this house. And you've got the marshals behind the house. You have the Sabine County Sheriff's detectives on the front of the house. They had one of those really long driveways, and they're off in the woods, so you can't see that they're there. They go through all sorts of threats as they're out there, one of them being a Rottweiler. And the other being severe thunderstorms, that they're sitting out for hours just getting pouring rain drenched on them as they wait, hoping that if Matthew is there, he will make an appearance. They'd been hearing voices on the porch, but they couldn't see who they were. And so after about 4 hours, somebody actually got off the porch and walked around maybe like the side of the house. And one of the men who was with them saw the face of the man and said, "That is Matthew." So now that he's ID'd, we've got the Sabine County Sheriff's just racing up the driveway trying to get to the house. We have the Marshals Task Force in a full-on sprint to the front of the house. They apparently round the corner, and as they're yelling, "Law enforcement, police!" he, like, throws himself up against the side of the house. Like, just, I'm giving up. They've done this. They've got Matthew. They put him in handcuffs. Kath, they go into the house. You know, they got to search, make sure there's no threat to them. Who do you think's inside?
Montana.
Matthew's mama, Cindy Hogan Edgar, was there. And when they walked into that house, she apparently was like, "Oh, Matthew was here?
Oh my God."
Apparently she did it with a straight face.
I'm sorry, man. Like some mothers.
So after 11 months and 2 days, Matthew Edgar was once again in custody.
So in January of 2023, almost a year after trial first began and about 5 days after Matthew was captured, he was sentenced. But before the sentence was imposed, Livy's mom, Darcy Bass, and her grandmother, Janice Lewis, were allowed to make victim impact statements. And of course, grandmother took the stand and started talking about what a lovely person her granddaughter was, and she recounted how joyful she was and how she had these dreams and goals for herself, and she was
making them come true.
And she, exactly, like, she was smart and she was ambitious. And then looking directly at Matthew, she said, "Whatever did she do to make you do this to her?" And I can't imagine a grandmother's sorrow at just the total disbelief that, you know, your granddaughter is no longer there and this POS took her. So Livy's mom went last, and that was her intention because she wanted Livy's own voice to be the loudest and last voice heard in the courtroom. So she actually played the speech that Livy gave as her valedictory address when she graduated from high school. And in the speech, she was expressing gratitude and thanking her family and her classmates and her teachers for helping her get where she was. And that was it. That was
the last thing said in the courtroom.
Exactly.
Before the sentencing.
Right. But when Ms. Bass was outside of the courtroom, she said, "There will never be real justice for my daughter's life. We lost more than her, more than anyone can imagine, but her name will forever live on."
After that, the judge sentenced Matthew Edgar to 99 years in prison, with the possibility of parole after 30 years. In November of 2023, so 11 months after the sentencing, Cindy Hogan Edgar was charged with hindering apprehension or prosecution of a known felon. To date, she has not yet gone to trial. Darcy Bass, Libby's mother, created a memorial to her 19-year-old daughter at the very spot on the roadway where her body was discovered. She did this so that the community would forever remember her daughter and what happened there.
So if you're interested, and we haven't asked this in a long time, and you want to rate us on Apple Podcasts, please do so, but only if you're going to give us 5 stars.
Well, that's all that's allowed.
Exactly. Otherwise, you zip it, lock it, put it in your pocket.
And please keep listening despite that statement. Also, please subscribe to YouTube if you're not subscribed yet. And if you're not watching us yet, there yet, please go there and do that as well.
Exactly.
Also, there is a 7-day free trial on Patreon, and we have lots of bloopers. We have extra episodes, and all of our episodes are commercial free.
And so, we have interviews. Kathy and I sort of do an interview a month or so.
You ask, we answer.
You ask, we answered.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So some of them are amusing, mostly just us. But thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply.